Welcome, everyone. My name is Mike Verbsky, and you are listening to Limitless. This podcast is brought to you by the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. And welcome back, everyone, to Limitless. This is your podcast put out from the Academy for Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. My name is Mike. Welcome back to all of our previous listeners. If you are a new listener, I hope you have enjoyed this episode that you're about to hear, and I hope that you do come back for future episodes. We do have more fun and games, more education, more information coming your way. Today, I'm really excited to be talking to Daryl Partridge. Daryl is an amputee, but he is a personal trainer. He's an endurance athlete. He has his own training studio, and his insights and where he comes from, I think you're all really going to enjoy hearing about tonight. Daryl, welcome to Limitless.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
As I said, so Daryl, you are an amputee, but you are an acquired amputee. You lost your leg a few years back.
Yes, I lost my leg about 8.5 years ago. I chose to have it amputated after 6 surgeries and 6 years of trying to fix an ankle that just became worse and was at the point where having the leg was a huge disability for me.
So how was it for you to really make that decision? You know, some people, as they go through their process of limb salvage, ultimately they get to a point of, forget this, it's not working. But some people, you know, they really want to try to hang on. How did you come to that decision to go through the limb loss surgery after trying to salvage for so long?
Well, first of all, it was one of the most difficult decisions I ever made in my life. The biggest reason for coming to that decision was basically I was disabled. I couldn't walk, and I couldn't walk on the leg. I couldn't use the leg. It was extraordinarily painful, even without using it. So by the time I came around to being willing to accept that I would lose the leg, I had already mourned the loss of the use of the leg. So when it actually came to amputating it, when I actually woke up from the amputation, it was like a huge weight taken off my shoulder because it was gone and I didn't have to make the decision anymore.
And how did you find it initially as you went through your rehabilitation, both in the hospital? I don't know if you went to rehab first or if you went home and dealt with your therapies on the outpatient side, but how did you find that process?
So I went right home. I did all my rehabilitation on my own. Basically, the process, for me, the process wasn't terribly difficult because I'm the type of person that can find my information and I'm willing to try things and so forth. And I immediately went to the gym. I hired a trainer. I said, you know, push me like I have two legs, and she went with it. And the ball just kind of kept rolling. But all that time, I could not find any support or help or education or anything. I mean, every place I went, you know, just sort of, there was nothing there. In fact, I lived for the first year thinking I was the only amputee in my area.
Really?
Yeah, there was just no help. I could not find any help, any support, any information. You know, I'm working with a prosthetist that basically is sending me through this, you know, very long and difficult road of things I have to do and to basically get, you know, a very basic leg that they knew insurance would pay for.
Okay.
You know, no real education about how the leg was going to work. No education on, you know, skin issues. It was all sort of like from the surgeon to the few minutes of PT I had to the prosthetist was basically oh, when you have your prosthetic, everything will be fine.
Okay.
And it wasn't really.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, a lot of times for many, many patients, it's not a linear process. It's, you know, there's, you know, peaks and valleys, right? So people, you know, they get a little bit of progress and then sometimes there's setbacks, a little bit of progress and some setbacks. And if you don't know that those are coming, it definitely makes the overall journey much more frustrating.
Absolutely.
Now in your area, what are your prosthetic options? I'm on Long Island, as my listeners have heard me tell before. And, you know, I've got, you know, 6 to 8 prosthetists kind of in my back pocket within a distance of my facility. So in terms of accessing services and prosthetists and information, it's fairly easy. That being said, I've spoken with many therapists from around the country where some of their patients have to travel 2 to 3 hours round trip to access their care. How do you have it in kind of your neck of the woods?
So that brings me really, you know, that your statement and your information there kind of really brings me to part of why I do what I do when I chose to do what I do. Obviously, I said that in my area, you know, as far as places to get a leg made, there's probably 5 or 6 within very close driving distance to me.
Okay.
So that's not the issue, really. The issue really is to find people who are really willing to sort of go outside the box to work with you. You know, most of the people that around here really hadn't worked with an amputee that was active or, and,
okay,
you know, they would say, oh yes, you know, you have to understand that most, you know, in the medical community, to say an active amputee really is an amputee that goes to work and goes about their life. They're not, it's not the amputee that's out running and doing Spartans and skiing and doing all the things that, that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So to find help to get the proper prosthetics, to go beyond sort of that basic, you know, being able to function, to go to work and so forth, is extremely difficult around here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But what I found is, yes, there are places in this country that you have to travel 3 or 4 hours to get any help at all.
Right.
And that's where, you know, I come in with helping people virtually to find what they need.
Now, were you, so you mentioned the Spartans, were you, you were doing the Spartan races prior to your limb loss surgery?
No.
No. So that was post-operative.
That was post-operative. I didn't even run before the injury.
Okay. I mean, and that's fantastic. You know, I got to say, there's so many people that I've met over the years and they didn't rock climb before, but they do now. Or they didn't do running before, but they do now. I know so many people that have taken up golf after their surgery. And I think that is just the essence of what this journey can be, which is that the surgery and the loss of a limb is not a final step, but it can really be a whole new beginning and a chance for someone to really have opportunity to start something fresh and start something new.
Yes, it can, as long as they have the correct attitude, support, and so forth to make that happen.
Yeah.
You know, I was always very, very active before. I mean, but I was active in, I mean, I've skied my entire life. I was active as far as, I was always doing a carpentry project around my house. I was always doing something outside. I was always on the move. I was biking, hiking, swimming, doing that type of stuff. I didn't actually run and I didn't actually go to the gym.
Okay.
That all happened afterwards.
All right.
I started going to the gym probably 2 weeks after the surgery. I was at the gym, you know, I went in on my crutches, put my crutches down and hopped around on one leg, did everything I need to do. I was box jumping, whatever. And, you know, the more I did, the more physical I did, the more I wanted to do. And for me, it was you know, figuring out in that gym that just because I lost a leg didn't mean that I wasn't a very strong, capable physical person.
Right.
And as time went on, I'm like, okay, well, you know, I want to run. So, you know, I go out and start running, and next thing you know, I'm running, and it's very empowering. So, you know, that actual going to the gym for me was to figure out that my body was still very capable. The running was a very freeing experience for me. You know, and I'm out running, you know, one day, and I'm thinking, God, this would be so much easier if I had two natural feet. And then I said, you know what? If I had two natural feet, I won't be out here running.
That's an interesting perspective to have right there.
So, you know, for me, I needed to do that. I needed to figure out that I was still a very active, strong, capable person. And that's honestly what I try to do in working with amputees, is I try to get them into the gym. And I immediately try to show them right away how physical they can be, even if they don't even have the prosthetic yet. And, you know, especially you get a young guy who just lost his leg in a motorcycle or whatever, and he's depressed and thinks his life is, you know, going nowhere now. You know, I get him into the gym, I pop my leg off, I'm hopping around on one leg, I'm demonstrating what I want him to do. And he's like, okay, well, this guy's doing it on one leg, so I can do it on one leg, you know? Mm-hmm. And when he leaves, he's like, wow, you know, I feel great. And that's really the power of what I try to make amputees see and feel.
What inspired you, and I think I kind of getting the feel for you here, but what inspired you to want to then open your own training studio? You know, we were coming through COVID and obviously so many things were shut down, and you decided I'm going to open up a training studio in the midst of all of this. I mean, that's a big endeavor and a big challenge to undertake.
Well, yes, it kind of all just fell together. I had worked for a large gym for several years, and I had a full load of clients. I normally pretty much always was the top producer in my gym, clients wise. And all of a sudden we're closed down. And I start doing things virtual immediately the next day. I start doing things virtual. I start teaching classes virtually over Zoom. The weather gets nicer. I find myself meeting my clients in parks and different places to train them. And, you know, it's sort of just that came to me, like, all I really need to do is find a place and have some equipment available, and I can do this on my own. I don't have to bring all this back to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what happened. I found a space. The toughest part was during that time trying to find equipment, but I managed to find equipment. And the day New York State allowed gyms to open, I opened, and my clients all came with me.
Oh, that's fantastic.
The benefit of the way I did it was they felt safe because they were coming and it was just them and myself in the space. They didn't have to worry about all the other people there. And actually for my clients that have disabilities and my amputee clients, I think they actually benefit more from coming to a private studio. For an amputee, it's very difficult for me to convince them to come work out at all. But one of the hesitations they have is going into a gym, and they're afraid of being, you know, looked at and stared at and all the things that come along with that. I had amputees traveling an hour or two to see me once a week, but they had to buy a gym membership to the gym that I worked with to see me. but they weren't ever going to use that gym. So I, you know, that piece is gone now. They come to see me and they pay me for my time.
They come to you directly now.
Yep. So I always thought I need the gym. And what I realized over COVID is my clients come to see me, not use the gym necessarily.
Right. Yeah, because the service that you're providing is something that they can get with or without the physical gym.
Yes. And because I do functional training, I use very little equipment.
Okay.
So the training I do, I don't believe in sitting on a machine in the gym. All the training I do, you are engaging your full body, which is why it's very successful with amputees.
Right. Because that's one of the big things that a lot of people that, especially that I work with, they're most concerned about is how, not just can I, you know, total knee extensions, you know, and how many pounds can I, you know, extend on my leg, but it's, I need to be able to walk from point A to point B. I need to be able to carry my daughter to get to the car. I need to be able to go food shopping. It's those functional skills that people really want to work on.
Yes.
Versus how much weight can I lift? Although I get some of those guys too.
Well, you know, I think your traditional, you know, stereotype of going to see a trainer is to, you're going to throw heavy weights around while the trainer yells at you.
I'm chuckling, but yes, you're right. And I think that is that stereotype.
So many people have to be talked into coming to see me. Like, they'll have a friend that sees me all the time and they'll be like, well, you really need to go see him. And they have such a tough time because they have this stereotype of being yelled at in the gym by their trainer. And then they come to see me and they're like, wow, like, this was not what we expected, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I had a young guy with Lyme disease who was really struggling, and he heard about me. And, you know, when he came to me, he said, like, I've literally gone to trainers who have yelled at me and told me not to come back.
Mm.
And the problem was he had no endurance.
Right.
So you just had to work with him until he got the endurance up. And within a year, I took him to do a Spartan, and he did fantastic.
Exactly. You know, as the saying goes, Rome wasn't built in a day, and to get through this process is not an overnight process.
Not at all.
No. What percentage of your patients do you think work with you virtually versus are coming to you in the...
At this point, the virtual clients I have live in places like Texas and Nashville, and, you know, they're not local.
Okay.
So they are amputees out there who, and a lot of them have access to all the help they can have or could possibly pay for.
Mm-hmm.
But they've tried it all and somehow they've come around and gotten to me, and that's where they found their help.
Right.
So at this point now, you know, we're past COVID enough that locally I'm doing all in person.
Right. For the most part, people come to the office, you know, and get their training sessions, but understandably not everybody can just hop in the car. You know, like you said, Texas, Nashville.
Yeah. So it's
not quite around the corner.
People across the country that, you know, can't get here. They're the ones I'm working with virtually.
Right. As you start working with someone who's coming to get going on an exercise program or resume getting on an exercise program, mm-hmm. and they've gone through their limb loss, if they're coming to you either just before or just after getting their prosthetic, what are the things that you go over with them in terms of what they need to know as they start exercising and returning to a lifestyle or starting a new lifestyle?
Well, I give them a complete education. I have worked with amputees who I worked with several weeks, 6 weeks maybe before they actually had the surgery.
Oh, great.
And then I get them in I want them back in to see me no later than 2 weeks post-surgery. And those people, I can get through the whole process with as little, I don't want to say difficulties because they're going through a difficult situation, but, you know, a smooth process, I guess, is what I want to say.
Okay. As smooth as can be.
Yes.
Surgery. Yeah. This isn't a hangnail removal. It is, you know, surgery. So, and yes, everyone goes through their own rehab process in terms of the post-surgical. So
if, you know, so if I worked with someone before surgery, what I work with them before surgery is I work on building their core, building their glutes, building their hips, because that's where they need the strength.
Absolutely.
When they come to me after, I work with balance. So between the time they're 2 weeks post-op and we're going to get them ready for getting the fitting done and everything for the prosthetic, I'm going to work on balance. I'm going to teach them all about how to care for the skin. I'm going to teach them all about this, you know, the possibilities of blisters and all that stuff. I'm going to desensitize the limb. I have several exercises I put them through to desensitize the limb. The more you desensitize the limb, the more prepared you are for the pressure once you put it into the socket.
Yep, absolutely.
And in doing all that, I'm also, once again, we're working on glutes. I'm working on getting them to engage. So if it's their left leg that they've lost, I'm getting them to learn how to engage their left glute. I'm getting them, if it's below knee, I'm getting them to learn how to engage their quads. All the things that most amputees can't do because no one's ever taught them how to, or no one's ever told them they still can.
Right.
So I'm working on all that before they even get into their prosthetic. By the time they get into their prosthetic, they very quickly usually can move on to gait training and walking and everything because I've got them all prepared. I've also been educating them all along on, you know, what to ask when they're in their appointments, their fitting appointments. I'm educating them on all the different liners that are out there, all the different suspension systems that are out there, all the different feet that are out there, the different knees that are out there if they're above knee. I'm teaching them, you know, information they need to know about the socket fitting, all that information. Now, here locally, I work with a prosthetist that, you know, we work together.
Okay.
So, you know, he will even come right to my studio if need be to sort of see what's going on, or I will video and send it to him if I see something, or if I'm like, this is, you know, I see the sockets doing this, or I think we need to adjust this or that. So I'm working with that. You know, we're a team. I've created a team.
That's great, because that relationship is so important. I impress upon all of our patients that relationship with the prosthetist is so important. And I will definitely argue that, you know, if you have someone like yourself who has that training background and that knowledge of how the prosthetics work, to have that relationship involved in an exercise program, in a return to lifestyle, because between then you, the patient, and the prosthetist, to be able to troubleshoot anything that comes up and to really help that patient work with their prosthetic for a positive overall experience, is, that would be fantastic, essential.
Yeah, and it is. And that's one of the reasons, like, I want to get them right in the hospital if possible, because I want to get them working with my team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want them working with a prosthetist who's decided that they don't want anything to do with me because I am not making them money, or, you know, one of the issues I have as a personal trainer versus a physical therapist is you get a little slip from your doctor that says that you have to go to a physical therapist and then your insurance pays for it and all that, called a script.
Mm-hmm.
And to most people, that little script is very valuable and meaningful. And because I don't need a script to come to me, they don't always see it as valuable until they actually get there.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things, though, is, you know, we always say the relationship that a patient has with their physical therapist can be a very positive experience, but unfortunately, with the limitations of the insurance system and the healthcare system, we're very often limited in terms of time out from surgery and time from the point that a patient gets their prosthetic to really being fully proficient on it.
Well, yes.
You can come in, though. Like you said, you don't need that prescription. You don't have to worry about some of those other pitfalls in the system where someone can have a much longer relationship and time to work with their prosthetic.
Yes. You know, the surgeon, you know, you go to the surgeon does the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the hospital, you know, you have some physical therapy that basically makes sure that you can go home and kind of be independent at your house. Then you get sent, you get your script at about 8 weeks to go have your first, go start through the fitting process for the prosthetic. And then you get the prosthetic and you get sent to your to physical therapy again. Physical therapy is probably going to be about 6 weeks and probably only enough time to really focus on getting that amputee able to walk in the prosthetic. I'm the missing link between all that stuff. And I only say that because amputees that come to me, that's what they tell me.
That's what, yeah.
That I'm the missing link. They're like, you're the missing link, and you're the link that every surgeon, every prosthetist, every physical therapy should know about.
Yeah.
And it's that link of a, probably the surgeon has two legs, probably the prosthetist has two legs, probably the physical therapist has two legs. So I'm the first person they really get to that is telling them what they need to do and how they need to do it and all this stuff. And they're like, okay, you know what? He only has one leg too.
Not so right.
Maybe he's right.
Right.
Plus, you know, like I sort of tie it all together into how they're going to function and deal with life. So many of them will tell me that they come there for physically for, you know, the strengthening and the exercise, but they get also come there for the mental therapy.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, like you said, you have that extra piece of the puzzle, right? Where I can talk to my patients, but I don't have that connection of having gone through limb loss.
Yes. Right?
And our medical director, you know, who's fantastic with the patients that have had these surgeries and the wound care and the healing process and that holistic approach, same thing, right? The, you know, wound care nurses and the psychiatrists, psychologists, all of them are fantastic. But the ones that I work with, none of them have gone through this themselves. And
yes.
When you can bring that to the table, that's where it's just, It's the whole bar is raised up a notch.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
You know, as far as limb care, I've dealt with blisters. I know what to do with them. I have dealt with wounds. I know how to deal with them. I've dealt with phantom pain. I know how to deal with it. You know, I understand the feeling that my clients that work with me that are not amputees, they don't really even see me as an amputee, even though I wear shorts every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it just doesn't affect my everyday as far as they can see.
Right.
It just doesn't affect my everyday. What they don't see is at the end of the day, I can't wait to get that leg off. You know, that last client doesn't know that I'm fighting back the urge to press that button and release that leg and be done with it for the day.
A long day is a long day, no matter how you cut it.
Exactly. So, you know, like I can express that to other amputees, you know, when they're saying, you know, like I've worked with a state trooper who lost his leg. He came to me because he needed to pass the physical to get back out in the field, which I got him to do. I work with a musician in Nashville who, you know, wants to be up on the stage doing his thing, and he doesn't want to be in pain, and he doesn't want to be tripping all over the stage, you know? But all these guys, they say to me, like, but, you know, after a couple hours, I'm in pain. And I can say, so am I.
Right.
So am I. But it just becomes what you get used to after a while.
Yeah. You mentioned limb care a couple of times, and this is obviously a big focus through the initial rehab stages. But as someone really starts exercising again and they're getting their prosthetic on, is there anything in particular that those individuals need to watch out for as they really start exercising and amping up their activity levels, or if they're taking up a new hobby?
Well, you know, really blisters. The big thing is blisters. If they start doing things like jumping, lunging, running, all those things cause slippage in the socket, which will eventually cause rubbing that causes blisters. The big issue is that if you've gone from being fairly sedative to all of a sudden exercising and being active, you're going to lose tons of volume in the limb quickly. And your socket's no longer going to fit. It's going to be too big. So that is something that they need to be aware of and how to deal with that. And also they're going to have to be in touch with their prosthetist about that.
Right. And I think that's also going back to your point from earlier, having that solid relationship between the prosthetist, obviously the patient and the family, if they're involved, as well as whether it be a physical therapist or the trainer who's working with that person, because as the trainer and or the physical therapist, we're going to see some of those things sometimes before the prosthetist does. And we can be that go-between to reach out and to see what can be done to assist the patient in their goals.
Yes.
What sort of things in particular do you look for, or do you want your patients, your clients to look for in terms of finding that right prosthetist?
For me, and once again, I'm primarily working with active amputees. I have some older amputees that have lost their limb to vascular reasons and stuff, and they work with me, but you know, the amputees that really come to me, seek me out, and stick with me are those that really want to be highly active. And so therefore, for them, they need to find a prosthetist that is going to think a little outside the box. Because there's just going to be issues. There's going to be socket fitting issues that they're going to have to think about. They're going to have to really think about how they're going to keep that leg on. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a guy who, it was a flimsy liner and it had a ring that wasn't attached. He had to slip the ring on. And literally he spent the entire hour putting his leg back on because it kept falling off.
Oh boy.
You know, once I got him hooked up with a different guy to make his leg, and I had, you know, told the prosthetist, you know, this is what's going on, this is what we need to work on, and he was then able to sort of think outside the box a little bit, not be so worried about getting the highest insurance paid out on what he was doing, and fix the problem.
Okay.
And, you know, if you work, you know, like, if an amputee comes to work with me, I'm going to give them a lot of information. I'm going to be very truthful with them. And I'm going to tell them what to go back and tell their prosthesis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've had clients come back and say, yeah, I told them what you said. And they said, when he shows us his degree, you know, from orthotic school or whatever you call it, then I'll listen to what he has to say. You know, so you got to work with someone that's not going to be so dismissive of some practical information that they're passing on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not telling them to go there to have, you know, unheard of things done. I'm making simple suggestions like, you know, if you just have him, you know, cut down the back of that socket just a little bit, it will help with range of motion in your knee, or, you know, try this kind of liner, it might work better, things like that.
Right.
So basically, to answer that question, is you want to find a prosthetist that's going to listen to you, going to understand your activity levels, and is going to work with you to get the best fit and best foot and best knee, whatever that you need to make it happen.
Right. And I think the other part of that comes down to having someone who is willing and able to have open lines of communication and having an upfront and honest conversation about the individual's goals, so that it's well understood that, you know, this is where we want to be. So how can we get this prosthetic to do X, Y, or Z?
Exactly. And you need, you know, from your surgeon right to every person you see, the attitude has got to be, you can do whatever you want to do.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
When I was getting my first leg and I was asking for certain things, first of all, the guy kept telling me, you know, even though I'm already in the gym box jumping on one leg and doing all this stuff, he keeps telling me, you know, oh, you'll be able to do this when you get your leg. Well, I'm already doing way more than that.
Right.
And then he gives me, you know, a basic peg leg that, you know, several months after I already have the leg, I show him a video of something I'm doing in the gym. And he's like, why are you doing it without your leg? And I said, well, because it gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just a peg leg.
Right. You're doing it better without.
Yeah. So now
the equipment's not working for you.
Yeah, exactly. Because my body does the work, not my leg. My prosthetic is just the tool.
Right.
You know, a skilled carpenter can build a beautiful piece of furniture with very basic tools, but give him state-of-the-art power tools and he can build it even better.
Right.
You know, that's sort of, you know, your body, you build your body strong and you build your body to work and do what you want it to do. And then you add the prosthetic and that's the that's the state-of-the-art tool that makes it better.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, you know, so he's telling me this, and then I go back and I tell him I need this in a leg and that in a leg. And he tells me, well, you have to understand that you have limitations. Well, that's sort of what I'm working on telling everybody I don't have is limitations.
Right. And the limitations are really only what you put on yourself.
Exactly. So, you know, from, you know, your surgeon, your physical therapist, your prosthetist, your trainer, whatever, you need to be working with people that are going to push you not to have limits.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yes. One of the things that's really hard for patients to kind of overcome, I've found, is to trust in the process and to be confident in their abilities to come back after this surgery. What are some of the things that you had to kind of get through your mind as you went through your journey? And then also, what are some of those sort of tricks and tips that you've brought out towards treating your clients?
Once again, for me, it was a little different in that, like I said, I had already mourned the loss of my leg, but the loss of the use of my leg while I still had my leg. So, you know, getting through the surgery, I sort of had this feeling like I was always going to miss and wonder where my leg was.
Okay.
And that really didn't come to be. I've never thought, where is my leg? You know, like, mm-hmm. So. And once I got going, you know, I guess that process of, for me, it was the process of going into the actual prosthetic that was the most difficult.
Okay.
Because I didn't realize that it was going to cause pain, I guess. You know, like when I first started wearing my prosthetic, it was extraordinarily painful. And that was very difficult for me. And that's one of the things that I really try to work with new amputees about, is to sort of eliminate that all of a sudden being in that prosthetic and feeling like, okay, now I feel like I'm really kind of lost. Now I'm really stumped. I'm stopped in my tracks, sort of. So by, you know, desensitizing the skin,
mm-hmm.
the limb, it helps a lot. No one ever told me to do that. So I basically went from healing from surgery to not doing anything with that limb whatsoever at all until I put it down into a prosthetic. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I really tried to work with new amputees.
Mm-hmm.
When I get an amputee that has been an amputee for a while, they've usually come to find me because they're having problems. They're usually they've picked up bad habits. They've got severe sciatic pain. They've got severe low back pain, things like that, that have come from not getting the proper training to use the prosthetic and not building the proper muscles needed to use the prosthetic.
Right, like we had talked about before.
Yeah, so I don't know if I really answered your question or not, but it's sort of the tangent I got off on.
No, it's quite all right, quite all right. You know, every now and then, I've been treating therapist for 20 years, but every now and then I do still get caught off guard with someone's goals. So I'm curious for you, what's been the goal that someone has come to you with where it kind of made you think a little bit harder? It was a little more outside the box than even you were expecting.
Well, I had the trooper, mm-hmm. you know, he was recommended from his physical therapist to come see me because that was his goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lofty goal, but when he told me that, I said, now that's not only your goal, but it's my goal to get you there. For a above knee amputee, walking stairs as normally as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I have one currently that we do that every, you know, will he ever walk those stairs the way he wants to? Probably not. But my goal is to get him to not avoid stairs.
Right.
And not avoid stairs when there's people on them because he doesn't want people to see him.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's really, you know, I often set goals for them that they don't think they can get.
I've done that a few times myself.
You know, just because I just feel that that's the way to get them to make the best progress, you know, so I set that goal of, you know, this is what we're going to do. And I use the Spartans for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will, you know, and it doesn't matter if they're an amputee or they're just, you know, the guy, you know, suffering from Lyme disease, or, you know, the other guy suffering from a congenital back issue, you know, at some point I will talk to them about the Spartan and I'll be like, I think you should sign up.
Right.
So I take every November, I take a large team of people to do a Spartan.
Mm-hmm.
This year I have about 30 clients.
Oh, wow. Going. Big group.
And so I'll, you know, that's in November. So around this time I'll start, you know, trying to get them to sign up. So if I can get an amputee to sign up to go do that, once they get through it, they're willing to set their goals higher then,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they've discovered that they can do it.
Right. It's a nice part about, you know, we always, you know, when we do our evaluations and it's always, what's your goal? What do you want to achieve? And the patient goals are so important because, like you said, we can set goals all day long, but the patients buy in, I feel, better to a goal that they've set for themselves. That Absolutely. Being said,
they don't always have high goals.
Right. I feel like sometimes because all they see is their limb loss, all they see is this new beginning that they didn't sign up for, they set goals that shortchange themselves. So where we come in as the clinician is to set those goals that will challenge them. You mentioned stairs, and you know, if they have, say, 12 stairs to get up to their bedroom and their main bathroom, on day one, I've got patients and families asking me for recommendations to put a chairlift in.
Yes.
And it's not necessary. It may not be feasible, you know, based on a short length of stay for rehabilitation, but it's something that does not require a stairlift and then, you know, construction project and installation, et cetera, because walking up and down a set of stairs with a prosthetic is 100% manageable.
Yes. Well, you know, I'll touch on the goal thing just quickly once more. And that is, I always ask what the goal is.
Mm-hmm.
I usually can get them to achieve that goal pretty quickly. The goals are often very low. Apparently in the hospital, I told my prosthetist that my goal was just to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And a year later, he reminded me that was my goal. I'm like, are you serious? Like,
right. You've done Spartan races and your goal was to walk.
Are you serious that you're bringing that up? Like, why would you ask me that in the hospital? Or why wouldn't you have asked me that, you know, 6 weeks later, at least, you know?
Mm.
So the goal, so yes, it's very important. I want to know what their goal is and I want them to get to their goal. I often have to set goals a little higher to keep them moving along.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, as far as, you know, will I need, you know, I had one parent that was ready to go out and buy their 24-year-old son a wheelchair because they thought he would always need a wheelchair. You know, very quickly, I showed them that he would not ever need a wheelchair. And that's part of my being an amputee as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, that family that wants to put in the stair lift, you know, if it's the wife wanting to put it in for the husband, or the husband wanting to put it in for the wife, or, you know, whatever the family scenario is, whoever, you know, lost the limb, I'm going to get that person. I'm not only going to get the person without the limb in. I want to get their family in to have, yes, a little talk with them.
Yes. No, absolutely.
And, you know, they come in and they see, you know, when I purposely start, you know, jumping over, you know, my weight benches and everything else in my studio, and they're like, okay, obviously we just need to give it some time, you know?
Right. Before we start ripping apart your home, let's get through the core strengthening. Let's get through the balance. Let's get through getting your prosthetic, and then, yes, move things forward from there.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you know, and I guess, you know, there's a lot of steps along the way.
Yes, 100%.
You know, I tell them right off the bat, being an amputee is hard work. It's hard work. Yeah. It will always be hard work. But if you put the work in, you're going to get the results.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, I really, you know, try to really get them to be just as independent as quickly as possible, to get them, you know, get rid of the wheelchair, you know, get rid of the walker, mm-hmm, you know. Obviously, you know, to live a completely independent life as missing one of your legs, you are going to need to have a pair of crutches around. You know, like in the evening, you know, I get home, I kick off my leg, I use crutches around my house.
Right.
You know, like, to me, that's just, that's life. You know, it's not a problem. I don't mind, whatever. So, you know, just even, I mean, you know, people that I know very well that might listen to this podcast have no clue that in the evening I use crutches to get around. So to let a new amputee know that that is something that's probably that you're going to need,
right,
is also helpful.
It's, you know, helpful, sure.
You're going to use your prosthetic, you know, 98% of the time, but 2% of that time, you got to have it off. You can't have it on 24/7.
Right.
So if I can get them right off the bat sort of used to, you know, using crutches and getting around on crutches and stuff like that, that's, you know,
that's an important piece of the puzzle as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if a, you know, a person, a new amputee shows up in a wheelchair and they don't have anything else physically wrong with them, I'm going to get them up on crutches immediately,
mm-hmm,
you know, and then if they're up using crutches to get around, when they get their prosthetic, it's just going to be easier to get around.
Sure.
So just little things like that, you know.
One of the questions I've really enjoyed asking all of our guests is, if you were going to be giving your one gold standard piece of advice, of information, of insight, whether it be to somebody who's going through their own limb loss journey, or if it's to a clinician who is working with one of these patients, what would that piece of advice or insight be?
That's a tough question. Well, you know, one of my go-to things that I try to get every amputee to do . One of the biggest questions that I get from a new amputee is, how do you deal with feeling like everybody's looking at you?
Mm.
And I say, present yourself as a strong, confident person, and that's what people will see.
That's great advice.
And it works. When I walk into a place, I'm walking into every place I'm going, everything I'm doing, I'm presenting myself as a strong, confident person. And over time, that's what people see.
Yeah.
And that's huge for your psyche. That's huge for your attitude. And I think that's one of the most important things.
Definitely. I agree. That's great advice right there. So I think that's something that I hope a lot of people are going to take away from this conversation.
Being an amputee should not be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You should still be a person. You should still be, you know, whatever you want to be. You just happen to be an amputee.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's a part of you, but it's not you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, like I don't introduce myself as an amputee, you know,
right.
I introduce myself as Daryl Partridge. I'm a personal trainer. I'm a endurance athlete. You know, I do this and that, and I happen to be an amputee.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, Daryl, thank you so much for coming on to Limitless today. This was a great conversation, and we certainly covered a lot of information today. I think some people may have to listen to our conversation twice to pick up on all the little pieces that we presented today.
Well, hopefully they understand.
I think they will. I think they will. This was fantastic.
Hopefully I didn't go off onto all kinds of weird tangents and not make sense.
No, you were great. You were great. So I do want to say once again, thank you to Daryl for coming on to Limitless today. Again, my name is Mike, and I hope you all enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed having this conversation today. And we look forward to seeing you, as it were, next time around. Have a great night, everyone.
Have a good night.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to Limitless. If you're interested in learning more about the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and at our website, www.amputationrehab.org. I hope you enjoyed this talk today, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and information coming to you soon.